States versus Claudie Webster, 13-1510. Mr. Stiller.
May it please the court, good morning.
Morning.
Claudie Webster's complaint is not that Judge Randa rejected his recommendation for a 96-month or 8-year term of imprisonment. And quite frankly, Claudie Webster's complaint isn't necessarily that eventually Judge Randa sentenced him to 12 years and 7 months. What Mr. Webster complains about to this court is that the record lacks any meaningful explanation supporting the district court's decision that a sentence of 12 years and 7 months, rather than any other sentence in excess of 96 months, was sufficient but no greater than necessary to serve the varying goals of federal sentencing. And upon that woeful record, this court is left with an impression in conducting its procedural review of the sentencing process that this was one of those cases in which undue deference was given to the guidelines and undue weight was placed on one 3553A factor, that being 3553A4, at the expense of the other equally compelling sentencing purposes. In particular, Mr. Webster advanced 3 forms of argument as to why a below-guideline sentence, and he was requesting 96 months, was appropriate. One of them had to do with his toxic upbringing and its interrelationship with his prior and current criminality. We'll concede that Judge Randa addressed that sufficiently. Beyond that, however, Mr. Webster touched on a concept embraced by this court, that being incremental punishment. That, you know, clearly he had previously been sentenced to terms of 2 and maybe 3 years of imprisonment, and that wasn't sufficient to get him to straighten up and fly right. But that doesn't necessarily mean that, therefore, the sentence that's sufficient but no greater than necessary becomes one of 12 years and 7 months.
Well, of course, though, after a point, the increments start getting larger, right, when the guy's not getting the lesson and the crimes get more and more serious and his age increases, then to get that person's attention and to serve that purpose of sentencing, the increment can become larger.
As an academic matter, certainly. Here it was basically fourfold, and there was no dialogue from the bench in explaining its sentence as to why 6, 9, 10, 11 were insufficient. Now,
does the district judge have to touch all those bases?
In every case?
Month by month, between what the defense proposes and what the court imposes?
In every case, certainly not, Your Honor. Federal sentencing is necessarily holistic. Different cases call for differing degrees of explanation. But in any event, the explanation has to be sufficient to permit both the public to understand what happened, and perhaps more importantly for purposes of today, to allow a reviewing court to understand and explore how and why the district court exercised its discretion as it did.
So how much did the district judge need to say to do this incremental evaluation to your satisfaction?
For instance, and I think, Judge Tinder, you mentioned the notion of age. If, for instance, the judge had said, "You know, Mr. Webster, you're a recidivist criminal. I think you're 32 years old here as of the day you were being sentenced. If I give you a sentence of 12 years, reduce that for good time, I'll remove you from the community until you're 42. I think that's what we need to do." That's an explanation. Nothing of that sort existed on this record. And what's curious, judges,
it sounds like you want it to be said in a certain way, or that the inferences have to be explained that the judge is making. That seems a little more than we require of judges.
I think on the facts of this case, Your Honors, where Mr. Webster was talking about his current punishment as compared to his previous punishments, where Mr. Webster was talking about his punishment as it relates to the punishments previously imposed on all of his co-participants, the judge did need to engage in some dialogue where the defendant is asking for 8 years, the guidelines call for a sentence of 12 years and 7 months. The record in this case really does tend to suggest that the judge rejected Mr. Webster's request, which was entirely appropriate and within the district court's discretion, with the default being you get a guideline sentence. That's further bolstered by some of the commentary the judge offered. The record is clear with this idea that at least in this case, Judge Randa takes the position that in this world there are two kinds of people. You're either a decent person or you're an indecent person. Clearly, Mr. Webster was viewed as an indecent person. And again,
how would you classify him?
Pardon me?
How would you have classified him?
I'm not sure my vote matters. He's a person who committed a serious crime with a serious prior record.
Let's just assume it matters. You were the trial judge. What do you think is an appropriate sentence?
I think 10 years would be perfectly defensible. In no form or fashion would I... Yes?
Go ahead and defend it.
Go ahead and defend it?
Yeah.
It is... basically threefold longer than relatively young Mr. Webster had ever served in prison before. It is meaningfully greater than the next highest sentence imposed amongst his equally, if differently, culpable co-actors. And it's a sentence that doesn't scream to have been from the guideline chart. It can't be overlooked.
You have to say that, reject the guideline charts when he's giving a sentence, say, I have discretion to accept it, and I'm rejecting it because I just don't like them.
Atmospherically, Your Honors, I think when a judge arrives at a strange and crooked sentence like 151 months, which is a sentence of 12 years and 7 months, one has to...
The guidelines themselves set out crooked sentences of months. I don't understand what...
It's on that... Only on that table does a crooked number like 151 months exist. We do not...
You treat that as evidence of unlawfulness in the sentence. 10 years ago, we would have said, of course that's the sentence. And the district judge is required to consult those guidelines.
Most definitely.
He did. He said the guidelines got it just about right. What's wrong with that?
Just about right can be very wrong.
Yeah, it can be, but it doesn't have to be.
It doesn't have to be.
Yeah, but I'm with you. I mean, I think the guidelines were dead wrong from beginning to end, but it has nothing to do with reality. We're now stuck with what we've got.
The table still exists. It's still
Latin
advisory.
Phrase.
It still has to be
great
considered.
Great Latin phrase called dura lex sed lex. The law is hard, but it's the law.
That it is. Again, I go back to the idea that a sentence of 148 months or 160 months or even a sentence of 151 months imposed properly might very well be defensible as substantively reasonable.
It's the magic words to come, not the sentence.
It's not the magic words. It's an explanation that allows this court to affirm Mr. Webster's sentence with confidence that the guidelines were not given more weight than they're entitled to under the law. Absent further questions, I'll reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
All right, thank you. Mr. Proctor?
Good morning, and may it please the court. My name is Ben Proctor. I represent the United States in this matter. Your Honor, the record in this case reflects that the district court properly calculated the guidelines. It allowed argument by the defendant as to what aspects of the 3553A factors would result or would lead to a below-guideline sentence. Then the court methodically went through the factors under 3553A, including the seriousness of the offense, the defendant's history and characteristics, and ultimately came to the conclusion that a 151-month sentence was appropriate in this case. That was within the advisory guidelines. Overall, the court followed the proper sentencing procedure. Now, the defendant has presented several arguments here that I think kind of boil down to two sides. One, did the court ignore non-frivolous, important arguments that he presented to the sentencing court? And number two, did the court adequately state on the record, adequately set forth on the record, enough of an explanation as to how it reached the sentence that it actually imposed. First, the defendant has argued that the past length of his sentences somehow justifies a lesser sentence in this case. I believe that when the court went through methodically the defendant's history, criminal history, including his past convictions starting at age 10, the incarcerations imposed following these convictions, various violations of probation, the court adequately addressed the defendant's history and characteristics that are related to the argument that he was presented. The court also addressed the role of the offense as it related to Mr. Webster, and that was the crux of his second argument that he believes was ignored, which he referred to as proportional sentencing to his co-defendants. But the way it was essentially presented in the trial brief was that the court needed to weigh his role in the offense against his criminal history, and therefore that was in favor of a lesser sentence.
Now, with respect to that, by the way, were any of the other co-defendants career offenders?
My understanding is that they were not, Your Honor. And that is not, that's not part of this particular record, so I don't have definitive comments on that part. The remaining arguments presented by the defendant were that there were controversial comments that were made. If you look at the context of the sentencing transcript, I believe that these controversial comments were not controversial. They went particularly to the judge's thoughts on personal responsibility.
Well, the comment about the guidelines being the law of the land is a difficult one to reconcile with the concept of the guidelines being advisory rather than mandatory. Can you explain the context of that comment to me?
Yes, Your Honor. The guidelines, the judge is required to consult the guidelines. He did twice refer to it as the law of the land, but in the same sentence where he referred to it as the law of the land, the judge said they are not mandatory. They are something that the court must take into account. I believe that that provides a proper context, that the judge did not feel that he was bound by the guidelines or presumed that they were applicable, but instead took into account the benefit of the guidelines, the decades of wisdom that have been put into the research that came to the guidelines, which the court also noted, which the Supreme Court has mentioned in cases such as Gall. The defendant also mentioned that he believed that there was improper reliance on the guidelines. Now, I think that argument is speculation. As mentioned, the court noted that they were not mandatory. It was not bound by the guidelines. There's nothing in the record indicating that. I believe it was bound by those guidelines. Finally, the defendant mentioned that there was no basis for this court to determine whether or not there was a sufficient evidence indicating that the sentence was sufficient but no more than necessary. I believe that that argument is simply negated by the sentencing transcript as presented to this court. Now, I'm happy to answer any questions that this court may have. Otherwise, I will be relying on the briefs, and I submit that the judgment should be affirmed.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Proctor. Mr. Stiller?
Your Honors, I'm going to start with a comment opposing counsel made and then return that to a question that was asked by Judge Tinder. Opposing counsel noted aspects of Mr. Webster's argument as speculative. I guess it's my position that the record in this case leaves this court to do a lot of speculation in terms of reviewing the process by which Judge Randa arrived at the sentence of 12 years and 7 months. And particularly, Judge Tinder, I think the law of the land comment is the one that gives us pause. Reading from appendix page 43, the judge began, "And so, you know, I appreciate all of this that's been going on. But when I look at the guideline range, and that's 2.5 decades of sentencing wisdom, if you want to call it that, but it certainly is the law of the land, and has been, and is not, it's not mandatory, but it's still law of the land." Judge, that first clause, "I appreciate all that's been going on," I think from a cold record, and that's all that's available to this court on its duty of review, is sort of like, you know, I know there's this thing called Booker and the Sixth Amendment, and that's all going on, but we've got these guidelines, and, you know, maybe they're advisory, but they're still law of the land. That's thumb-on-the-scale kind of language.
The law of the land requires that he read refer to those and use them as part of his thinking.
Without
that
a doubt.
That is the law of the land.
Indeed it is.
So
but
he was
all of this
that.
Other stuff is similarly law of the land. And that's where I kind of come back to the idea that on this record that's available to this court, I think there is a basis for discomfort that this was a case in which the guidelines were given undue deference in violation of the Supreme Court's mandate in Booker. And so for that reason, on behalf of Claudie Webster, I ask this court to vacate the sentence, remand the matter for further proceedings and the creation of a more thorough record. Thank you.
All right. Thank you to both counsel, and we'll take the case under advisement.